Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Sofen. In the Smart Firefighting Podcast, we cover technology and innovation trends across public safety. Here in this mini-series from the recent Innerschutz show at Hanover, Germany in June 2022, we bring you more than 12 episodes from the show floor. We have a lot of amazing speakers, and I'm really excited for all your feedback from this content. I find myself asking everyone to paint a picture in these episodes quite a bit, so bear with me, because it was really hard to fully capture the Innerschutz event in words. A key message that we hear multiple times throughout this podcast is that in order to innovate in public safety, we must ask questions and listen to first responders. We've got two ears and one mouth, so let's use them accordingly. This episode of Smart Firefighting is brought to you by Flame Systems. Flame offers fully immersive virtual reality learning solutions for training in hazardous and emergency situations. This allows first responders to learn how to fight fires in safe, realistic, dynamic virtual environments. To learn more, visit flamesystems.com. In this episode, you're going to hear from the director of PVStop, Jim Foran. Jim and his team created an ingenious product around how to deal with the electrical risks from solar panels during fire scenarios. Jim outlines the challenges that solar panels present for first responders while on scene and how the PVStop offers a simple spray-on solution to a complicated problem. If you are interested in the electrification of everything, this is a great one to check out, and make sure to connect with Jim on LinkedIn and visit pv-stop.com. Sitting here at Innerschutz in Hanover, Germany, alongside the CEO and founder of PVStop, Jim Foran. How are you doing, Jim?
Good. How are you going, Kevin?
Going well. It's day four of Innerschutz, and I think we're all operating at maybe not quite 100% efficiency, but we're still chugging along.
Mate, just for the audience at home, you're looking spectacular right now, my friend.
Well, I think you look quite dapper yourself. Yeah. So for those who aren't here in Hanover, Germany, paint a picture on what's going on here at the show. Like, what have you seen here at the show, and what excites you about what you've seen at the show floor here?
Yeah, well, I came here without any major preconceptions. This is my first Innerschutz. I am quite blown away by the size and the scale of it, and I'm told it's half of what it was previously, which I can't even fathom. It's been a great opportunity for me after 2 years of lockdown COVID in Australia. This has been my first opportunity to reconnect with a lot of our global partnerships. So yeah, just to be reconnecting with distributors, colleagues, has been fantastic. Getting face to face again, I love the human interaction.
It's really great to be IRL and just be sitting next to you and
I can
touch you.
You're real. Ouch.
it's really great. So one thing that I've heard so much about in the fire service in the past couple years, has been this whole conversation around electrification of the fire service, whether that's electrifying the pump, whether that's lithium-ion battery storage at the home, whether that's lithium-ion batteries in cars, and all the advantages that it brings. There's all these good things that batteries and then solar panels that charge these batteries bring. But oftentimes in first response, and just in general, I think we forget when we bring a new innovation to market, we maybe don't really consult or think too much about the ripple effects and the externalities that those new ways that we live and operate could impact first responders.
Yes.
So with that, this evolving landscape from batteries, solar panels, the connectors, just all everything together, paint a picture on this landscape. Like, where were we? Where are we now? And then maybe give some context on these evolving threats to first responders.
Yes. Well, what you're alluding to is all part of the global renewable energy revolution, which has been driven by government incentives, rising electricity prices, and popular public sentiment. You know, people wanting, understanding that we can't keep on going with fossil fuels. We've got limited resources, and the electrification is potentially a once in a generation shift towards improving the planet. And as you rightly say, there are some amazing technologies rolling out that are making the world a better place. But innovation always tends to move at a much quicker pace than standards, legislation, even the baseline knowledge and education. And behind all of that is the safety implications and, as you say, the ripple effects. And probably the topic on everyone's mind right now is battery fires. Even by that definition, is not quite accurate. Batteries are stored energy. It's not so much a fire as a stored energy potential for. It's more like a bomb than a fire. And we've started to see some incidents around the world, in various countries, in the US, in China, in Australia, in Europe, where firefighters are encountering these unanticipated risks associated with these technologies and finding that they don't necessarily have the training and education foundation or the operating procedures or equipment to necessarily adequately deal with these emerging safety issues. And as I said, I'm seeing a lot of activity in battery around battery storage and the safety implications of that. But what I think the various agencies need to look at is that's one component of a much larger ecosystem. And it's the ecosystem that starts with solar panels, which are the electrical generator. Then they store power in these batteries. It's also connected to, you know, these batteries are charging electric vehicles. Those electric vehicles at night time are charging in the house and becoming a secondary battery storage, portable battery storage system in themselves. Then you've got the electric vehicle charging stations and the safety of charging those, where they're located. All of these things. You know, you're even hearing where electric vehicles are caught in an accident and are damaged, how best to deal with those. The thermal runaway can happen hours, days, weeks after an initial incident. You're getting different procedures, you know, where I'm seeing in some countries electric vehicles that have been damaged have to be stored outside at least 30 feet away from anything potentially combustible, etc., etc. So there's all these new challenges and ripple effects that go along with this, what I would call DC electricity ecosystem.
I mean, thank you for painting that picture. And as you mentioned, there's no one silver bullet that's going to necessarily solve these problems. And all these new problems are emerging because we've made this transition so quickly. We're still obviously have a long way to go. There are these, I find it interesting, with these different procedures to address the problems that happen.
Yep.
Whether that's a car fire that happens, and I've heard some people that are like, just let it burn. Some put the car in a container of water. Some are using blankets. Some are using extinguishers. There's all these things. I don't necessarily think right now there's a wrong answer. I think we need to just have active and very, very timely dialogue.
Yes.
And not necessarily being like, this is right, that is wrong. It's obviously a lot of science and research happening, but the dialogue around how we deal with these threats is really important.
Yeah.
And solar panels right now is something that I know my father has a home in Los Angeles. Someone came to my dad and said, hey, we'll put solar panels in your roof and your power will be free and you don't have to do anything.
Yep.
And now my dad doesn't pay a power bill. He has free power. There's excess power generated and it sells it back to the grid. So it's sort of like a win-win model. I think, yep, a lot of that was from these incentives that governments gave, and it's great in theory. But at the same time, now there's these risks to first responders when dealing with a fire that happens on a solar panel or a battery or just in the house in general, because from what I know, Mother Nature is always right and the sun is always shining, unless, you know, something terrible happens. But because the sun is always shining and these solar panels create power, talk me through that risk. Like, when the first responder gets to a building, they're usually trying to, you know, save life and then save the property and de-risk everything.
Yes.
What is that challenge now that exists when solar panels can't really be turned off? Why is that a problem?
So, as you touched on, in most fire departments around the world, when they respond to an incident, first protocol is savable life. If there's no risk to life, make safe, which means isolate electricity, isolate gas. Then those risks are mitigated. They can adopt offensive procedures. And if it's, say, for instance, a fire, they can tackle it with water, knowing they can do so relatively safely. The problem is now, when they respond to a structure, house, building, factory with solar panels, as long as it's daylight, those panels are producing lethal amounts of DC electricity. In professional terms, that's known as the DC danger zone. And up until now, there has not been an effective product that can isolate the power at the source of power production. In the US, for instance, rapid shutdown technology is now being legislated, which is an electromechanical solution that operates, reduces the power output down to a single solar panel in a string of solar panels. So it does reduce that electrical risk, but each individual panel is still producing power. So I would refer to it as a tier two safety solution. It's operating downstream of the actual source of power. So yep, that's the fundamental problem. Because they can't safely isolate that power, they'll treat it defensively, which means they'll protect the perimeter, protect the surrounding structures, but they'll let it burn. Now, number one, it's typically not in a firefighter's DNA to sit back and watch something just burn. They want to take proactive action, but yeah, they can't operate against procedures. So this is now coming to the attention of the insurance sector. They're starting to collect data that's showing that a structure featuring solar is prone to more damage because first responders are treating it defensively. So I want to emphasize that a well-installed solar panel system using good quality system componentry and serviced on an annual basis will give you years of trouble-free operation and is no more risky than any other type of electrical device. However, there's a gold rush to get through these government incentives to get solar installed. And because solar panels don't make any noise, they sit on roofs, out of sight, out of mind, what people don't realise is you get what you pay for, and not all systems were manufactured equally. And that's what we're seeing. There are a number of reasons why solar panels come dangerous. It can be branches falling on roofs. It can be vermin chewing at wires. It can be lightning strike, hail, depending on what region in the world. But by far the most common cause of solar panel fires or solar panel risks is poor quality system componentry or poor quality installations. And statistics out of Australia, which is my home country, approximately small-scale solar is audited by the government, and they've been doing that since 2011. And fairly consistently, they're finding about 3.7% of systems are dangerous, and a further 16-17% are substandard, which means dangerous waiting to happen. So that's about one in five systems are below standards specification. And I've got no doubt that those stats are very, very similar globally. So when you look at just the sheer number, once again, using Australia as an example, 10 years ago, there were 100,000 small-scale installations in Australia. Today, there's 3.1 million. Now, the US market is much bigger in terms of population. We're talking millions of installations, with up to maybe one in five of those potentially being a risk to first responders.
One thing I want to clarify, it's not solar panels on roofs don't only create risk for when the solar panel gets on fire, but it's when any fire in the house or any fire in the building happens.
Correct. Like, you hit the nail on the head. I'm basically been talking about incidents where the solar panels caused the incident. Now, I can't give you hard data on this, so don't take me to court. But I believe that for every incident caused by solar panels, there'd be another 10 incidents where the solar panels aren't the ignition point, but the fire will encroach and then involve the solar panels, and then the electrical risk develops.
It's one thing you mentioned earlier is too, there's many reasons why these solar panels can become a problem. There are all these things that humans do that cause disasters to happen. I remember one fire chief told me, when he was staring at the garage door, he was like, as long as people are out there doing what people do, those garage doors will keep going up.
Yep.
And
yep.
So there's just these unknowns. There
yes.
are these, the beauty that is the imperfect human of the things that we do that create challenges. And now we're throwing solar panels in the mix, which are very well intended, have good, when done at scale and done right, producing power with this whole global renewable energy revolution you speak of. A lot of positives.
on the sustainability side, I won't go too far into this, but there's actually a lot of research as well that we don't get enough energy produced out of solar panels to make the amount of energy that went into producing it worth it. So while solar panels look good on the surface, and I think they are good, if they aren't made the right way or if they're not really used properly, they're actually they're carbon negative in terms of not actually producing more energy than it costs to make them.
Yep.
So that's for another conversation. But what I want to dive into more now is, like, you mentioned isolating the power at the source of production.
Yes.
How do you do that? Why is that important? And walk me through what that process looks like.
Yes. So I mentioned that there's rapid shutdown legislation in the US, which is predominantly microinverter systems, DC optimizing equipment, which is designed to reduce the power output to the actual individual module level, which is a good step in the right direction, there's no doubt. However, those systems tend to be a little more expensive than a standard string array, and by string array, that's a number of panels connected in series down to a central single inverter. But yes, they are electromechanical, and you can see some problems emerging around that. And without deep diving too much, DC electricity is very different from AC electricity. AC electricity, alternating current, oscillates positive and negative. I think in the US it's 60 hertz or 60, yeah. 60 times.
This sounds like a stupid question, but when I plug my computer charger in, why doesn't it work here in Europe?
That's a good question.
I mean, I have the USA cord.
Yes.
And I have the adapter.
Yeah.
But it's still... doesn't charge.
It's not working?
No.
Ooh.
So maybe I need a new cord. Who knows?
Yeah. That could be a new cord.
But this, even, you know, me being just kind of a...
It could be you in technology.
Yeah, it very well could be me. Usually I'm a control, delete, restart the computer type guy. But this comes with power too, of 60 versus 50 hertz to 110 versus 240.
Yes.
All these terms, you know, I hear them. I know what they are objectively on the surface, but... the layman person has no idea what that actually means and how that impacts them.
And look, without sending your audience to sleep, from a first responder perspective, AC alternating current, as I said, positive, negative, 60 times a second. When you switch it, it's very clean. It shuts it off because it can cut it between the oscillations. It's very clean, neat, nice way of switching it off. DC, direct current, is constantly trying to flow from source to load. It does not like to be interrupted. It does not like to be switched. Every time you switch DC, it arcs onto the switching mechanism. If you remember the old Frankenstein movies and those big blade switches on the wall and the arcing, that's a DC switch. And any, you know, regardless of the DC source, every time you switch it, it is arcing onto that switching mechanism. It just doesn't like it. So the more switches, the more relays, the more connection points, creates the more potential points of weakness. Those can become hotspots, which can become arcs, which can become fires. Now, with this module level shutdown or rapid shutdown, there's a lot of additional connection points, which means a lot more potential points of weakness, which once again, when it operates properly, it's fantastic, but installed on roofs, under environmental conditions, 24/7, 365 days a year, they can deteriorate over time. So there are definitely some questions over the long-term reliability of those type of systems. But as I said, ultimately, they're not isolating the power at the source. So really, the only way to isolate the power produced by solar panels is to stop the light. Light is the source of power. Early on, fire departments were using tarpaulins to throw over the panels, that in some cases, if it was an appropriately light-blocking tarp, that would stop the power. Some of them are a bit transparent. They didn't stop the power. UL did a lot of great research on this back in 2011. But ultimately, yeah, if you've got a light-blocking agent that you can apply to the panels, that will isolate at the source. And you know, that's the type of product we have developed in PVStop.
So tell me a little bit about the chemistry of the material,
yep,
and then how it's applied. You kind of alluded, yep, to that, but the chemistry and then how it's applied.
So PV stop is a water-based polymer. The best analogy I can use, it's like a tricky black latex paint that you spray directly onto solar panels and apply it like a liquid tarpaulin. The beauty is you can spray it from a fire extinguisher vessel from a distance of up to 10 meters or 30 feet. So you're not engaging directly with the solar panel array and potentially putting yourself at risk. And you apply it across the center of the ray with a coverage of approximately 40%. It will make a solar panel system electrically safe. Then just for additional peace of mind, you apply the product across the remainder of the panel, and just by spraying it on, it's instantly reducing switching off the DC generator, which is the solar panels themselves.
So you don't actually need to get 100%, you just need to reduce it to a certain.
No, and that's a question I get quite, what happens if you miss a bit of some of the panels? Not a problem. As long as you've got around 35 to 40% coverage on each of the panels in the system, it doesn't matter what type of system, whether it's a rapid shutdown or a string array, it's equally effective on all types of systems. So it takes...
Why is that? Tell me more about you to inert it. Does it eventually turn off at a certain point or...
Yeah, well, once again, without getting too technical, volts times amps equals watts, and watts is the power output of the solar panel system. By getting that coating covering the 40% across the center of the array, it's like pulling one globe out of the Christmas lights. You pull out one globe, the whole string of globes goes out. What you're doing is basically breaking the circuit. So you will still have voltage being generated by those solar cells that aren't covered, but you'll have no amperage. So if you go back to my equation of volts times amps equals watts, you can have 100 volts running through the system, but if you've got no amps, you've got no power output. And that's how that 40% coverage part of the equation works.
I did not know any of this before the conversation. And this is important because I think when I saw it too, I was like, oh, well, what if I missed part of the solar panel? Like, do I need like five of these things? And so,
yep.
Well, really, you use it kind of looks like an extinguisher.
Yes, we've got a couple of delivery systems. The first delivery system is an extinguisher type vessel. And whatever country we're in, we use a locally standard certified watertight fire extinguisher vessel, but of course it's got the PV stop agent inside it as opposed to a more traditional, you know, fire suppression agent. And the reason for that, it's a path of least resistance. First responders know what an extinguisher looks like. They know how to operate it. It fits on existing brackets, on existing vehicles. It's just that path of least resistance. But once again, it's one of a suite. There's going to be circumstances where the extinguisher vessel, it might be hard to access, dangerous to access. And so our second delivery system that we've developed is a drone delivery system. So literally a drone that can take up to 16 litres of the PV stop agent and literally fly across the top of the panels like a crop sprayer, spraying the agent onto the panels, which can be done remotely from a safe distance and can deal with large scale.
We need to talk more about that. I'm very intrigued by that. So two different use cases or ways to apply it. Any case studies or where is this being used in the field?
Absolutely. So the first major international fire service to finish the trial stage and who've now adopted the product permanently is the London Fire Brigade. The success of that has obviously... the word of mouth has spread. So some of the examples, London Fire Brigade, Singapore Civil Defence Force, in closer to home for yourself, FDNY, the New York Fire Department, are currently in the midst of the trial. In these trials, the product's been used operationally, been used in anger, and so far it's been extremely well received. In every scenario in which it's been used, it's operated exactly as we advertise on the can. So, once again, as we get more services validating the product and validating the fact that it's improving firefighter safety, we're growing exponentially as we speak.
Jim, that's awesome. And not only am I excited about what the product is and how it helps, is I can just tell from you and your intent that you're doing this because you care. You're doing this because you know this is a problem and you've come up with this incredible solution that just is simple and it works.
look, it's a simple solution to a very complicated problem. One thing I should point out is once, and another question I quite often get asked, once you've applied this black paint onto the solar panels, if there's fire, is that a problem? Being a paint, is it going to exacerbate the problem? And, you know, the main primary purpose of the coating is to electrically isolate the solar panels. But because it's used in a life risk environment, it has to have a number of other product attributes. So it's fire retardant. It will extinguish a Class A fire in its wet state. In its dry state, it's non-flammable. It's also non-conductive, so you can't get electrocuted up the stream when you're applying it. Very importantly, it's non-carcinogenic, non-toxic, environmentally friendly. And from a system owner's perspective, post-incident, if the solar panels aren't damaged or aren't the cause of the issue, it peels off like a big sheet of latex without damaging the system. And the discarded coating can be thrown away in normal garbage waste.
This is a temporary black paint job that it can be removed.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
What was the moment where you're like, I need to create this product? Like, this is so brilliant.
Well, I can't take all the credit. My business partner, Luke Williams, has actually been a solar panel designer and installer for over 40 years. So he was one of the forefathers of the solar industry in Australia. And he had an incident where he was on a roof, got electrocuted by the panels. Next thing he knew, he woke up, he was on the ground with an electrical burn, and he thought, and this was back before solar had really boomed. And he thought, if this can happen to someone of my level of experience, this is going to be a massive problem in the future. So that was the inspiration.
He really felt the pain.
He felt the pain quite literally.
Wow. Well, I feel like we could probably talk for another hour and a half.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to wrap it up here. But what is something that you would want to leave our listeners with? A challenge, a question, a mic drop, something that you want to leave us with?
What I would like to offer out to your audience is new technologies we are in a once in a generation shift in the way we produce power. And there's all these fantastic new technologies emerging, which are going to improve our quality of life and the quality of the planet. Traditional, you know, fire service, emergency services agencies are traditionally very conservative. And all I would say is embrace innovation, be on the lookout for companies that are finding new and exciting solutions to these new and emerging problems. But above all, be pushing back on your organizations for training and education, because just understanding how the technology works itself, take our product out of the equation, whatever, take other products out of the equation. I see so many near-miss scenarios just purely because you don't know what you don't know. So education training is going to be the key feature of combating these new and emerging risks and will lead to further innovation. So innovate, educate. That's the main thing that come out of.
Mic is dropped on that one. Well said. I mean, Jim, thank you for your passion, your ingenuity, your creativity, and just bringing this to life. It's really important, and I'm really excited to see what's next.
Well, thanks, Kevin, and I appreciate the platform, and let's do this again.
Hey, till next time.
Thank you so much for listening to the Smart Firefighting Podcast today. If you enjoyed what you heard and got any value, please drop us a rating, leave us a comment, or reach out to us on social media. Have a great day, and together we can advance the future of smart firefighting.